We're very happy to have Dr. Dewey today present on something about integrative health paradigm. We know that that's what he's well known for, and it's really an honor for him to be here today. We've been trying to get him for a long time, and it's a perfect opportunity. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Ron. Actually, I'm here not, to talk, about research. I'm here to kind of share with you something that I've been working on for the last 4 decades, and my interest since the 70s is to try to figure out how to develop a new health model, just like people try to use stem cell or use genomics to solve problems. I try to go back to the roots of medicine, try to go back to good clinical medicine. How do you develop a health model that can solve the majority of problems that you encounter in healthcare, particularly in primary care? So that's what I'm going to talk about today. And what I want to do is to kind of show you how this model get developed, how this get to be applied at UCLA, and then at the same time try to see who would be interested to collaborate with us. Let's see, how let me just go forward here.
You can use the arrows.
Keyboard.
Oh,
the keyboard. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
There you go. The right
thing. Okay. So how many of you would like to be born and then stay healthy throughout your lifespan at 120 and then just drop dead? Okay? That's what everyone wants, right? Now, how many of you are clinicians in the clinic? Or you're many researchers? Okay. So I mean, I kind of like to see some clinicians to learn this, because what I don't want is that people keep referring patients to us. I want more doctors, but if not doctors, health coaches or nurse practitioners can do this, okay? Everyone can learn how to do this, all right? So, so instead, many patients who get referred to us, who come to us, have this type of problems in combination. Not one by one. Many of you may be doing research looking at one problem, okay, one problem, maybe fibromyalgia or interstitial cystitis or IBS or chronic fatigue, or people just get recurrent infections and sinusitis that fail, sort of surgery. People get recurrent UTI and are on antibiotics for the rest of their life. You don't want to live like that, right? No one wants to live like that. Now, we see many people, in the healthcare profession, as well, including doctors and nurses and medical students and residents. So how do you go about solving this problem? I think I have a model, that allows me to at least bring the student who failed the PhD program, who am I to finish the PhD, and then, do an internship, and then be a researcher in health service research, okay?
Just a little clarification. So you say up to one of the conditions. You literally saying that they get referred for one thing, so one doc, they're not thinking about all their conditions, they're referring for one often?
No, what I'm trying to say is that, there are more than 500 physicians within the UCLA system who refer to us, right? Okay? From different specialty, okay? So they may come in because of things that no one knows what else to do. We are the clinic of last resort at UCLA. Okay, so they don't come in with one problem. They come in with multiple problems. Okay, but obviously, the common thing is that the rheumatologist will send fibromyalgia to us. GYN may send pelvic pain to us. GU may send interstitial cystitis. We have just finished a study to show that people who fail surgery for sinusitis, they refer to us. So I mean, we have people who are having asthma and on steroids, and they're seeing dermatology, allergies, or whatever. So basically, what I'm talking about is a whole new model of just trying to figure out a way to solve problems. And I want the researchers to figure out how to do this type of research. Okay? It's not going to be a disease-based model. It's a patient-centered model.
That's what I'm trying to say. They think they're thinking about one disease.
Exactly.
And when you see them, they really have a lot of other diseases.
But I see a patient. I don't see disease.
Well, what
okay. Okay. Yeah. All right. So
conditions.
So this is a very important way to think, because I would argue that the current healthcare crisis that we are experiencing, both economically And clinically, it's because the way we think about how to approach problems, how to solve problems, okay? So I'm into problem solving. I've done enough research, you know, in bench research, clinical research, outcomes research. I've done many things, you know, in my career. And my last 20 years building this center, clinic, is to figure out how to build a clinical model that hopefully will replace or add to the current model, okay? So, how many of you have seen this CNN documentary? Escape Fire. Okay, for those of you who have not, I think it will be very interesting to talk about how, you know, what this documentary about, you know, ways to rescue American healthcare, which is in crisis, and a lot of what's being, you know, discussed is issues of the current problems, which we all know, and how potentially integrated medicine may be helpful to address it. Okay, I believe that what they have, you know, introduced are the Arizona type of approach, which I think is a little different from the approach that I have developed at UCLA. I think that their approach is still very much modality driven, different type, you know, to look at all the other approaches as different ways of addressing the patient. We basically just blend what I believe is the best of Western medicine with what I know about Chinese medicine. Okay. So that was me, you know, 40 years ago, just, you know, some years ago, finished UCLA chemistry, and then I basically went to medical school, and then during my spare time, I studied Chinese medicine. And I went back to Hong Kong and learned Chinese medicine, and my interest at that time is to learn what I can through, you know, UCLA about how Western medicine approach problems, and at the same time, try to understand Chinese medicine and the scientific basis of Chinese medicine and the last, you know, several decades of China's attempt to put the two together to create one new medicine. And that's basically what I'm after, build a new medicine. So that was me as a resident. And over, you know, the few decades, you know, what I've done is to kind of publish papers with Dr. Connolly. Dr. Connolly, do you remember the paper we published? 1981. 1981 is how old we both are. He was my chief, okay, in clinical pharmacology. I specialized in internal medicine. I subspecialized in clinical pharmacology. I also got bored in geriatrics. I've done bench research, outcomes research. I've been a gatekeeper. I've been a super consultant in the hospital. So my first 20-some years is to basically integrate what I know about, you know, Western medicine. At the same time, try to figure out how to understand enough about Chinese medicine, not superficially, in a very deep way, to create something that is, you know, new. So basically, I mean, I did the OHAD trial, 10 years, you know, hypertension, you know, and I, you know, did mechanism research. You know, I do research with Dr. Ron Hayes, you know, in evaluating health-related quality of life change in individual patients. So, and then, you know, basically kind of talk about, you know, our thinking, you know, in approaching patients with different type of problems, including cancer or rheumatoid diseases or, you know, so on and so forth. So this is a kind of a, you know, a model that I believe, you know, over the last 20 years, thousands of patients, it has been tested to a point that now I can train my fellows, and my fellows can now take it and then build a new site. Okay? And what, you know, Sonia, who has been my postdoc, has been trying to talk about how to do, you know, research to build the evidence base for Chinese medicine or integrative East-West medicine. And then what Wei Zhen and I have done is basically figure out how to turn this information and then globalize it, particularly through, you know, the scale that we see in China. We are now embarking on training 8,000 physicians and 1,500 public health officials and 1,500 rural village medics to try to have them learn relevant Chinese medicine, this new model of, you know, integrated medicine. and then my own son, who is trained at UCLA in medicine, internal medicine, and geriatrics and East-West, is now building the primary care East-West model, basically training as many primary care physicians as possible who can be problem solvers, not mainly just, you know, referring to subspecialists. Because I believe that many problems that we get from the subspecialists, they don't know what else to do. We have the potential to help this group of patients. Okay, so the most important thing is to build this medical home with the relevant team of people to allow patients to be cared for and then work in conjunction with the relevant subspecialists with what we believe to be, you know, sort of the right way to do. Because right now, the ways is that these are blind spots of Western medicine. They keep getting referred. You see the list of patient, conditions, and those conditions are the bane of most medical practice right now in primary care, okay? So there are now 57 health centers, health systems that are now really developing integrated medicine throughout the country. They're still a very weak force compared to what I think the world needs. China is much faster, because China has been embarking on integrated medicine for the last 50, 60 years, and they have East-West hospitals, they have TCM hospitals with relevant Chinese medicine, and Western hospitals with Chinese medicine. And what is really, important is what I like to see scaling up, the manpower for the health system transformation. So at UCLA, I'm the chair of this collaborative for the last 7-8 years. There are many, many research, people, programs, within, this collaborative. Dr. Goh, Dr. Heba, now Dr. Xiaoping Li, Ameren, Mayer, and Michael Irwin. There's an eCAM journal, and Lonnie Seltzer in pediatric pain. But what we have is basically the clinical program that basically serves as my clinical laboratory to test out this model. And there's a lot of potential for researchers to work with us. So our mission is to basically how to improve health and quality of life by bringing together the best of Western and Chinese care traditions that provide healthcare. I think safety is key right now. Conventional medicine is not as safe as we would like, and sometimes it's not as effective. For the amount of money we spend, it's not cost effective for the relative poor quality of life that people may have with many of the things that we spend on. And for sure, it's not accessible for the majority of the world. So my mentor is Dean Mellencamp, who brought Western medicine from Johns Hopkins to UCLA. And Bill Ussery from 1962 to 85 when he retired. And I've talked to him about this interest of mine since 1970s. So basically, that's what he encouraged me to do in 1993. 20 years ago, that's what he said. And he already recognized that it's not just education or research, but basically care for patient, prevention. And most importantly, he recognized that it's synergistic application of principles originally in the Eastern and Western civilization. Because a lot of research right now is Western approach examining another modality or another technique. And what's important is to recognizing the way of thinking affects how we are capable of solving or not solving problems. Okay? So we basically have many programs, in the last 20 years. And we are actually educating different level of people throughout the last 20 years to the point where our referral base are throughout UCLA, people who are my colleagues, some of them are teachers, some of them are basically my students in every discipline. But I'm going to talk about the clinical model today because I think that... So we have board certified physicians. All of them are UCLA... all of them are UCLA trained except for one who is USC trained. And now we have two new internal medicine fellows coming in doing 2-year fellowship with us. We call it primary care East-West fellowship. And then our acupuncturists are also trained in East-West medicine. We now have 2 sites, and we are building a 3rd site in South Bay. We have 1 in Westlake already. And we have a 5-month waiting list for new patients to come to us. So most patients already exhaust conventional medicine, and they fail or intolerant of medication surgery. So, as I said, many people come in with all these problem lists. So how do you begin to think about, a majority of them will come in because of pain, because they are on too much narcotic, they can't tolerate the NSAID, they fail surgery, and so on and so forth. And obviously, we cannot bring everyone back to life like the young graduate student. because, you know, we have 80-year-old, 90-year-old, you know, people who are on so many programs that each one is almost like a project, you know, to try to bring them back to life. But the younger they come to us, you know, the earlier we can bring them back, you know, to productive life, not, you know, quantitatively, just like transplantation and dialysis. So that's the reason why we want to bring it to primary care. And we want every primary care, not doctor, primary care person, including women, put away women at home. If you understand this model and you figure out how to do it, coordinate the care, you will get much, much, you know, farther. So this is actually the data that, you know, I collaborated with Roberto Vargas, who presented this data. We have 10-year data of people in the in our clinic, just our Santa Monica site, you know. A lot of people with, you know, migraine, neck pain, low back pain, shoulder pain. So pain is basically what brought them, you know, to us. But as an intern, as a geriatrician, as someone who have done research in 10 different diseases, they all mean something to me, that as I use this model to approach this patient, you can see that when the pain gets better, the blood pressure gets better, the asthma gets better, the arrhythmia gets better, the GYN problem gets better. So that's really the model that I would like every primary care clinician should know about. So it goes back to William Osler, okay? So William Osler talked about the patient. You need to understand the patient, all right? You need to basically understand what sort of patient has a disease, okay? And that's really the crux of how we believe Chinese medicine comes in. And we'll talk about what we mean by patient-centered care. There's a different, the same name, different connotation, different meaning for Western medicine in terms of patient-centered care versus our model, or Chinese model of patient-centered care, and how we put the two together to create a newer model of East-West patient-centered care. Okay, so Chinese medicine basically, and maybe it's the old Chinese medicine, because right now in China, as they try to modernize Chinese medicine, they have begun to medicalize, Western medicalize Chinese medicine, so it becomes disease-based, rather than patient-based, the whole patient-based. The whole model of Chinese medicine look at the psychosocial environment, the natural environment, how it impact on the dysregulation, deficient dysfunction of the particular patient, and how by virtue of putting the two models together, we are able to solve not all the problems, we can add value to most problems. So this is a paper that Sonia and I wrote, also Marion Katz, who is now working at the VA. It's the person-centered medicine in the West, and it's already published, you know, in the European Journal, you know, of patient-centered medicine. So Chinese medicine, you know, I think that most of you know about person-centered medicine in the West. Okay, we talk about shared decision making. We talk about, you know, understanding of the person from a psychosocial perspective. Even though we talk about we teach it in medical school, but we are not using as much at the clinical, you know, arena. So what I think is important is to understand Chinese medicine in in terms of, you know, how to look at a patient. It's a pattern diagnosis, trying to understand all the different factors that affect a person's, you know, illness and health. And then, rather than sort of encouraging patients to follow the doctor's advice, compliance with health coaching and so on, the important thing is to recognize in Chinese medicine that the body view, you know, is not so deranged and depleted, you know, like the end-stage patients that we see in the hospital or with umpteen surgeries and dialysis on umpteen drugs. Is a patient early on, the body basically can heal itself given the right stimulus, okay? And we call that placebo in Western medicine. As a clinical pharmacologist, you need to know that, you know, the way to find a drug is to see if the drug has any specific effect on top of what the body can do for itself. So I think it's very important for us to understand how these two, you know, can be put together in our clinical model. Well, first of all, I mean, most people have been worked up, so maybe over you know, workup, okay? Because the patients keep getting more and more testing when their problems cannot be solved. They see umpteen, you know, people, subspecialists. And then our history taking really go all the way. It should be more than just childhood experiences. My work is now I'm starting a course during the summer to teach undergraduate, because I believe that gene therapy starts, you know, at the time of conception, even before conception, to get the right genes with epigenetics. So it's very important for us. But then I want to take my work to pediatrics, because I think that in with childhood experiences, you know, many seeds of ill health are already planted Okay? So very important. And then work experience. What type of work do you do? How long it takes them to drive? What do they do at work? What type of people work with them? You know, and you know, the stress level. What type of trauma? I mean, we're talking about going to, you know, Iraq. You know, I'm talking about the war. You know, any trauma, just going to, you know, be raised in a boarding school, being bullied, okay? Nutrition, not the average nutrition, but also nutrition that, you know, may not be appropriate for that person. If you have that, you know, particular, you know, constitution in Chinese medicine or genomics, you know, what is good for you may not be good, you know, for somebody else. So very important. And then after lifestyle, you know, in terms of exercise, a lot of people exercise inappropriately, okay? When you exercise inappropriately, that is sometimes, you know, lead to dysfunction, you know, dysregulation. A lot of people, they already work so hard, you know, at work, you know, running like, you know, away from a tiger, type of, you know, flight, you know, fight and flight response. And then they go and then try to drain themselves further with the wrong kind of exercise. So again, it's kind of more or less trying to go back to really understanding the person. So one thing is to look at the patient, how they walk, how they sit, what's their posture, and then touch the patient. And then examination, you know, look at the guy's face, you know, look at the guy's eyes, look at the guy's tongue, okay? Just touch them. Many people basically, you know, I don't care how many conditions they get, it all boils down to imbalance. We talk about imbalance, you know, we talk about autonomic neuroendocrine, we talk about immunologic, we talk about vascular, we talk about coagulation, we talk about all type of imbalance the body cannot regulate itself. And then that leads to flow problems. Too much, too little, not moving, moving too fast, right? And then the body basically has losing its ability. This is the key. Losing its ability to re-regulate balance and flow. And that's chronicity. That's how you get chronic problems. So that's why, first of all, you need to figure out how do you utilize, you know, this approach when it's becoming just episodic. Okay, there's a warning signal. Become chronic. You need to figure out what's going on and reverse it. Right now, we don't deal with that, okay? At best, in Western medicine, we talk about managing a chronic. With this model, you can reverse it. You can reverse chronicity, okay, to make it episodic. Because then you look at what is the pattern. So you can kind of lump many conditions into one because it all boils down to the same pathophysiology. We just label them by different subspecialists with different disease names and so on. Oftentimes, a lot of them we don't know. So education is the key. That's why we want to figure out how to train enough people so that I don't have to keep talking about it. I need to train health coaches with this model so that health coaches will be able to kind of talk about, I mean, basically, my role is to just, you know, let people know where I see, where you come to this situation, you know, what has been happening, in what way I'm going to be able to help you move back, you know, into a high level of functioning, a better quality of life. So lifestyle modification, including not to do weights, not to do push-ups, sit up straight, okay? If I see your head, you know, bending down to read a book, okay, you have to write a check for a non-profit to me. So then they would, and then I say, do you want to picture yourself walking across the street when you are 50, 60, 70, 80 years old, this way? You see all these women, a man walking this way? You don't want to be like that. A lot of people, because they have such a lousy posture, that it's because of their neck and back trouble. It's not an orthopedic problem. It's basically a regulation problem, because when the neck is in trouble, the back's in trouble, you know, the whole autonomic neuroendocrine systems are in trouble. And that's regulation. Okay? So acupuncture to me is a technique. It's not a technique. Acupuncture is a way of thinking about how to use a stimulus in the right area to re-regulate the system. Because you can basically, just like driving a car, you don't know all the details about a car. You know that when you put your step on this and on that, you know what function it would be. So acupuncture is basically teach you how to stimulate the body to re-regulate and replete. Okay? So triple-point injection is basically a variation of acupuncture stimulation, but it pays. It pays us because of Western medical treatment. So it pays us and allows us to have an extra time to talk to people, you know, about what they ought to be doing. So Bruce McEwen, you know, is the stress researcher at Rockefeller. You know, last, you know, 20 some years, he wrote this, you know, many papers, you know, a good review, you know, that I read, you know, in the New England Journal, 1998. You know, just like I read Lefkowitz, you know, receptor work, you know, he may get the Nobel Prize maybe in 5-10 years, but Lefkowitz got a Nobel Prize, you know, when he worked with beta receptors. So he talked about this allostatic low concept, and that, and I think it's kind of very important for those of us, you know, who are in internal medicine to read up on neuroscience. Neuroscience basically relates to acupuncture-like stimulation. You can basically don't use acupuncture for the Chinese, you know, visitors. Don't think about acupuncture to treat different diseases. Look at acupuncture as a way to re-regulate through the brain and the neuroendocrine neurological system to balance out the vagal and the sympathetic, you know, and then try to, you know, look at how, you know, the various systems can be re-regulated. But again, if you have enough stress, the body basically gets so depleted that different pathways get activated from basically neuroendocrine, immunological, you know, and affect different systems. So what's happening is that we are treating the symptoms. We're not treating the root of the problem. The root is the person. Unless you treat the person, even Chinese medicine is basically treating, you know, symptom, not the root. The root is to really give the patient, give in China better environment, you know, psychosocial environment, also, you know, natural environment, you know, now that they have so much pollution. So let me just go over, like, you can go to our Explore IM website. I think there is a, you know, bookmark that I hope that you can use, maybe just pass this around, to allow you to kind of learn some of the things that I talk about in a much expanded way, because we want to allow people to learn this so that they are, you know, those who cannot come to us as patients or come to us as students and residents and for training, that they can at least try to look at, you know, how we think, how we look at stress. Most people in the Western world think about stress actually still a lot of thinking into psychosocial stress. Our way of thinking about stress is that when the body is very depleted, anything that is over and above what the body can handle is stressful, whether it's chemical, like the wrong kind of foods, or mechanical, or psychological, or could be environmental. So this is how I see where Western medicine is very good at, but they spend most of the money in this stage, okay? I think that for people who want to stay well, who already had minor health problems, they're not minor, they are warning signals for this, that the system is now beginning when you have IBS, a little GERD, you have a little PMS, you have a little insomnia, and you just don't feel good, you know, so on, and it's becoming more chronic. That is should be where primary care doctors need to learn this to help the patient not go down that spiral. Because I see people smoldering, you know, before they get into the full-blown lupus, the multiple sclerosis, and so on. And even for, I want to say that even for something that we think we do very well, like Graves' disease or Hashimoto's thyroiditis, I mean, these patients have an autoimmune problem. But we are not treating the autoimmune problem. So we just like replace the thyroid. And then this patient later on, you know, develop, you know, many of the other autoimmune diseases. So, you know, the key thing is to really learn the concepts of Chinese medicine. The concept of Chinese medicine is really what I believe are the gem after all these years of thinking about. So stress management, as we discussed, you know, in terms of total body stress, you know, relief. The diet, besides the average good diet that, you know, has been developed through Western medicine, we use the TCM way of looking at diet that adjusted to, you know, the various stages of one's, you know, health recovery. Adequate hydration, because when you don't have enough, you know, hydration, there's too much heat. Heat, you know, and you know that, you know, when you have too much heat in your system, you know, you get pimples, you get constipated, you know, you just feel a little irritable. You know, then you need hydration, but then also for women, once they have the period, there's a way for that, you know, heat to come out. But then when they're menopausal, that's why a lot of problems come around that time. I don't have time to really get into many of these, you know, aspects. Each one can be a lecture by itself. Appropriate exercise, sleep is very important, because when you don't sleep, I think sleep, that the, you know, 20, 30 minutes of that deep sleep that make you feel like, you know, you are refreshed. A lot of people don't have that, you know. And then medication is still very useful, but buy you some time. But if you have to take pills for a long term, you are making the body lazy. Okay, sure, we all know about, you know, withdrawal syndrome from steroids and, you know, ALVA agonists and so on and so forth. But when you have patients take medicine for a long time, it's, you know, basically the drug company's dream. Do it every day, right? But But instead, is the body already, you know, losing its ability to regulate what is, you know, its ability to do it? Okay? So, good posture. So, I believe that integrated medicine is not just, because right now, I would say that, you know, a good internist, a good primary care doctor should be coordinating at least Western medicine. Because see, that's what you're supposed to be doing. And then now patients are going out and they find all kind of other, you know, health practitioners. How are you going to be, unless you know, be aware of what they're getting, you need to be a better, you know, I would say quarterback. But a lot of mixing. A lot of patients are now trying to quarterbacking themselves. They're doing it, you know, all the, you know, on their own. Yeah. So I think that there's a lot of ways. It's potentially deleterious. There's adverse drug, you know, interactions. And I think, you know, what is important, you know, is to have true integration. Is to when, is to see when to use what. Okay. And then, because, but I think the majority of the Western medical education do not include what is out there that most people are doing. Okay, and that's very dangerous by itself.
So I just, for a point of clarification, are you saying that integrative medicine is training Western, typical Western providers in some of these abilities to recognize and treat patients differently? Are you advocating for a different educational approach in medical school?
Well, it's,
I mean, how do you integrate? I'm just trying.
Well, I know. This is a very, very complicated, you know, issue. I mean, I cannot even bring clinical pharmacology, you know, for medical school education. I mean, Matthew, right? We try to struggle to get clinical pharmacology, you know, into UCLA. I'm talking about standard Western medicine. All right. So, at best, I think the way I see it right now, most medical school may integrate in the medical school, you know. When you have pain, you do acupuncture. When you do nutrition, you know, then you
but
do
you
herbs.
But you yourself don't do acupuncture. You understand the importance of it, and you refer that patient to acupuncturist.
No, it all depends. That's why, you know, I have two of my doctors who are UCLA graduates, who finished residency in internal medicine, and then they do 2-year fellowship with me, and then they get a degree in Chinese medicine. They are just consultants. They are the trainers of, you know, other of the people who want to be, you know, a East-West consultant, or you want to be a primary care East-West. My own son, basically, still have half his time doing, you know, primary care, but then he learned increasingly, you know, East-West, so that he would then be hopefully the leader of a medical home that would then orchestrate the other practitioners that can do the, you know, the work. I mean, it's difficult to have enough people who have this in one person.
Yeah.
Okay, take many years. Okay. So what I believe is that I think biomedicine is very useful for disease detection, you know, but only do PET scan and CT or all this stuff, you know, maybe not too many times, you know, or endoscopy too many times. Acute condition management, you know, sure, sometimes for your migraine, you still need to use your triptans and so on, but then, you know, the thing is that the root of the problem is not, you know, triptan deficiency or something like that, okay? I mean, you can take care of many of these migraines just by, you know, taking care of the patient. So I think the Chinese medicine concept of balance is important, you know, and the belief that the body can actually heal, because see, we call it placebo, okay? When in fact the body is constantly healing until you do too much harm to the respiratory system, that it becomes more of a chronic problem. And that you know, it's really important to have both knowledge. You know, I don't advocate, you know, people just to go to see a TCM practitioner, because you would miss something that Western medicine is best at. Okay. And I think the idea about prevention and the culture of health is very important. Basically, the prevention and culture of health is to build up your, first of all, don't deplete your functional reserve. Every time you get yourself injured, whether it's mechanical or chemical or infectious or psychological, whatever, your body basically is losing its ability to regulate. So I'm going to basically stop, you know, just like, you know, and then let Sonia to talk about, you know, the current research, you know, in CAM and IM. And then, but before I have patients waiting for me, so I have to go earlier. But before I go, any questions, comments, anyone interested to explore this further? So you would like to explore further, we can set up another time to...
We've met before.
I know. You took my course, right? So Sonia would be a good person you know, she has just been, you know, appointed or at least proposed for.
Now we know each other.
Right.
Thanks.
any other, yeah, comments?
Sort of a related question. So what would be the best strategy for someone to become knowledgeable of the combination, the integration? Because it sounds like traditionally they might start in the West philosophy and then come over and learn some Eastern stuff if they're from here. But is there like a direct link where you're learning both sides? Or
yeah, I've been lucky that I learned both at the same time since medical school. I think that there's a lot of unlearning to do once you think one way. So some of my undergraduate are now getting this exposure as a pre-med. And then some of the students are coming as medical students. At the fourth year, I think first, second year is medical school is a little difficult because they don't even know either, you know, I mean, they don't know West, okay? I think it would be good for someone who know enough about West, see what is good, and then see some problem with it, okay? The best is to have some of the physicians who are out there, and then they want to just learn something new for them to be able to solve more problems, okay? And then that would be the best time that, you know, they can be taught much quicker. Any other questions? Okay, comments? All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, so I'm just going to take over. It's like a relay race. I'm going to take over to talk about kind of the way that this presentation was framed in the title. What can we learn about outcomes research from integrated medicine? And I think that broad overview that Dr. Huey provided from a clinical perspective of what exactly we do in integrative medicine is a great background for understanding sort of the research that's being done in integrative medicine and also where it dovetails with what's being done in health outcomes research more generally. So the problems, and Roberto has presented on this in this very room, so I'll just reiterate the problems with research in complementary alternative medicine and integrative medicines of any form is that the individual components of the CAM or integrative systems usually are studied instead of whole systems, right? So it's usually like, does acupuncture work for this, or does this herbal formula work for this, when in reality it is all offered together. Right? So, and it also neglects the complex individualization of interventions, where practitioners are tailoring each intervention towards the patient. Now, from my perspective, having done research in both conventional and CAM settings, I feel like there's a subtle form of individualization that also happens in conventional care, right? People, the way medicine is applied in everyday practice actually matters, right? And when we separate out and do research based on individual components, we're not getting that, right? And rarely in any practice is any one medication given at a time. You understand you have to, for safety reasons, you have to separate it out and do research. But when we think about health outcomes research and understanding the impact that our practices are having on patients, then we need to start to put the pieces together. So the other issue is that there are differences in individual practitioner approaches. There's use of multiple interventions and treatment protocols that change at each visit. So I'm a practitioner of Chinese medicine, a patient will get a diagnosis, their first treatment, and perhaps I'll prescribe an herbal formula, and then a month later when they're coming weekly, their symptoms will change and their presentation will change, and I'll change the formula. Maybe take a few herbs out, add a few herbs in, but each week they're also getting different acupuncture protocols too. So how do you do that in research? It's extremely challenging. So the other issue is that the use of conventional diagnoses varies. So for example, if you're going to do a study looking at Chinese medical treatment of depression, for example. What is depression in Chinese medicine? The DSM-IV did not exist in ancient Han Dynasty when some of the techniques were developed, right? So that becomes a huge translational problem of taking a diagnostic category that's embedded within a framework of how we look at the body and understand illness and translating it into Chinese medicine or integrative medicine in any form, right? So that translation is problematic. And then there's also challenges in outcomes assessment. So are we looking at efficacy or are we looking at effectiveness? If we're looking at efficacy, what are we looking at efficacy of, like, or for, right? Because if it's efficacy for treating the depression, you know, does their HAMD score go down, or does their SF-36 score go up? You know, if that's the outcome we're using, then that relates back, it kind of loops back to the diagnostic categories that we're starting out with, right? Or is it effectiveness? How is this effective for making a patient feel better, right? And then how do we measure that? And there's different measures for assessing success in integrative medicine. So for example, in Chinese medicine, if I have a patient who's suffering from a kind of a chronic condition, MS or something that's not going to just go away, right? But their pulses feel better and they have more energy. That's successful, right? I'm not treating the problem. It's not efficacious in the sense of making it go away, but it has it's effective, right? And that's how you assess success. So how do you translate that into measuring health outcomes? And then also there's, of course, the relevance and the appropriateness and the comprehensiveness of the outcomes that we're using. So I think just last week in here, we talked about how the SF-36 and possibly also the PHQ-9 are not necessarily sensitive to understanding changes at the lower socioeconomic, you know, in the lower socioeconomic classes. You're not, when you're using those scales to measure changes that related to an intervention, because of the way they're framed, they're not getting what's really changing in people's life. So we're thinking about the appropriateness of our outcomes. Sure, it's especially highlighted in integrative medicine, but these are all, I think, issues that pertain to what's happening in research more generally, right? Especially health services research where we're starting to want to say, hey, what's really happening in here, and how can we create interventions that actually change lives? Right, so what's really needed? At one level, right, in the field of integrative medicine, the outcomes and costs of combinations of CAM and conventional medical treatments, right, need to be studied. Outcome measures should be reproducible, safe, and they should be cost effective, right? And we should have the capacity to do them. We need to understand public access and information about CAM, so perhaps more of like outside of the treatment room, what happens there. And we also need to understand the adverse events associated with CAM and IM therapies and the interactions. So those are very broad level things that we need to look at. If you bring it back to the question of patient-centered outcomes, there's some work been done by Verhoef, I can't pronounce her name, et al. In 2006 even, but there's a group in
Canada.
Canada. International. She's in Canada, but there's a group in connected to the International Society for Complementary Medical Research, right? Researchers in Europe and Canada and the U.S. are thinking about how do we create patient-centered outcomes for CAM and IM research. So how do we measure the physical, right? The psychological, the social, the spiritual, quality of life and healing context and healing process. Now what this is a result of is the fact that doing any sort of research in IM begs the question of the measures that you're using. Sort of where we can kind of careen around or maneuver around the sticky issues related to outcome measures in conventional research, you can't in integrative medicine. And so people have been really thinking deeply about this. So, you know, what's happening in integrative medicine research right now is very exciting. I just got back from Beijing. The Society for Acupuncture Research conference was there, and then also the week before that, I was in Miami at the Consortium of Academic Health Centers for Integrative Medicine's research congress. And there's really a step back in the field of integrative medicine research to look at methodology very, very critically. And there are several sort of innovative approaches that have come from that conversation, such as whole systems research. Now, whole systems research is very, very similar to comparative effectiveness research. So now at this point, there's a conversation between people who are more trained in comparative effectiveness research and those who develop the whole systems research paradigm. Whole systems research means that you study a whole system at once. So you're, if you're studying Chinese medicine, you're studying Chinese medicine. If you're studying Ayurveda, you're studying Ayurveda. If you're studying, you know, Western conventional psychiatry, you're studying Western conventional psychiatry as a whole, as a united system. You're not taking pieces out, right? And there are complex statistical and methodological issues arising at every, you know, step of the way when you're doing that kind of research. And that's the same, very, very similar to the way it's going in comparative effectiveness research. So health services research has also been looked at, especially here. Our own group has done several health services kind of approaches. But even there, you're dealing with some of the same challenges. And then, of course, my other hat is that I'm an anthropologist, and some of the qualitative social science research has been adding a lot to the picture, especially from a mixed methods approach. So, you know, each of these new frameworks for thinking about our method a lot, like, you know, stopping what we're doing and stepping back and saying, how can we retool our methodologies to approach whatever we're approaching, has been really, really active in integrative medicine, just because of the situation of, you know, the multiple therapies, the difference in diagnoses, etc. So I'll leave a few minutes for questions. But the conclusions that I think we really wanted to focus on today was that there is a need for innovative methods in CAM. And I am, and that mirrors the need for similar methodological transformation in medicine more broadly, especially with the rapid increase of chronic health conditions and the realizations of the limitations of the RCT. 10 years ago, when I wrote my master's thesis on the RCT in Chinese medicine, you know, the real kind of discomfort with the RCT was very, very much kept within the confines of integrative medicine. You know, from my perspective at the time. And now it's a huge conversation at the level of the NIH, in this room. We're talking about those limitations. So what this situation offers is it not only makes it possible to garner funds for innovative research that were inaccessible before. So in CAM, or I am in CAM, the NIH Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine, is you know, one possible place to get funds, but it also invites CAM and IM researchers, especially health services researchers, to team up for collaboration in a way that hasn't kind of been available before. So from my perspective, as a junior investigator, it's a very exciting time to be part of research in this field, and I'd like to think of what we're doing as not just integrative medicine research, but it's medicine research. And so it's exciting, and the reason I think that Dr. Hugh is particularly excited about this talk, as well as I, is to start that conversation, and that we're open to further collaborations, and that's it.
Yeah, as you were talking and before you even said it, I thought there was a lot of parallels with sort of the health-related quality of life work and health services, and you had all these different dimensions, and I just wondered if you guys have thought much about the existing measures or whether there need to be additional measures developed that are targeted for CAM in assessing health, and like WHOQOL, World Health Organization, seems to be pretty comprehensive, but is there a need for more measurement that way, as well as patient evaluations of care about CAM?
My first response to that is that I don't think it's CAM specific. I don't think there needs to be better outcome measures for CAM studies. I think there needs to be better outcome measures. And I happen to have been convinced that PROMISE is a really positive step in the right direction. You know, and I will qualify that with saying that as an anthropologist, I don't think any of those measures are ever going to fully replace what we can get from observation of doctor-patient interaction and interviews with patients and qualitative thematic analysis, a grounded theory development of what's going on for people. I don't think they'll ever be replaced. And I think it's, for me as a budding methodologist, I'm thinking that those are the types of things that need to be thought about in tandem. You know, as we develop our new outcome measures, then we're also thinking about what kinds of interview questions we're going to be asking and how we're going to relate the two sets of data together. I think now a lot of mixed methods research happens kind of that, you know, even if the qualitative researcher is involved from the get-go, which often they're not, they're often brought on later, which is better than nothing. But if you, it's like a statistician, right? You think you're in a conversation with your statistician as you're developing your study, and then if we create the same conversation between the development of you know, quantitative measures and qualitative measures, then we can get somewhere. And again, I'll come back to, I don't think that this is a CAM specific issue at all. Anything else?
Yeah, so since Dr. Hayes talked about, you know, the methodology, so when we was in Miami, mm-hmm. so someone in Penn State University, the professor talked about is Linda
mm-hmm.
Linda
Carter. Linda Carter?
No, the last name is different. Okay. She talked about the most approach.
It's Carter.
The multiple optimization strategy technology. Right, the most approach. And then because, you know, integrated medicine research, usually you're talking about, you know, at standard care plus integrative Chinese medicine modality. So, and then she developed the model to just, you know, say multiple optimization. So slice the standard care and the Chinese medicine modality, maybe, and then the different module, and then piece a different module together, maybe you say, you know, module and treatment plan one, treatment plan two, and then use statistically and the test the different combination. So that's, you know, I think that's very well received in during the conference.
I definitely think that we should, as a seminar here or something, just or even just to get together to look at most. As a possible avenue.
Yeah, so that makes sense rather than just saying one piece at a time or the whole thing and not knowing.
Right.
Also, this thing, you know, cost wise, you know, it's a lot terrible. Yeah.
What about Dr. Huey used to collect SF-36 data sort of on a somewhat routine basis for, you know, I don't know how much it was actually used for clinical purposes, but that was sort of the idea, and I think that may have died. So are you doing any routine, like, outcome data collection for clinical purposes?
I'm not.
I mean,
as the researcher at Center for East West Medicine, I'm not participating in that. And so
right
I'm,
now, right?
If I'm not, I'm not going to say that it's happening and I don't know about it.
We are. We're doing SF-12.
But, I mean, are you connected to the center?
No.
No, I meant, yeah.
At the VA.
I'm at the VA. We're doing this for CAM.
Oh, you're doing it for CAM?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
We
great.
Don't know what we're doing, but we're doing it.
Yeah.
We're doing it because we love the measure.
Yeah.
Right? Well, we're doing this on 12.
Yeah. So that's a whole other area, too, but it would be interesting to hear him talk about that or you in the future.
Right.
Because that's the big challenge is you could use it for research. That's great, but can you do anything with it to help with care?
Right.
Is it giving you any meaningful information?
That's a very good question. That would make a fascinating paper study / something.
Yeah, but I
can you use
just the history and finding out why it's not being used. I think it must not have been valuable. You know, it's often
will
be valuable, but somehow people don't know how to use the information.
Right, because when you get to have a conversation with the patient and find out what's really changing for them, why do you need that extra piece?
Well, I mean, we're using it to compare across, you know,
You're using it as a researcher, but
right.
as a clinician, I'm not sure what extra thing that it adds. I mean, I would be fascinated as a clinician to have my patient come back and have filled out that, and I could kind of compare, but in the reality of practice, it's just not, you're going to just ask a patient, how are you doing? So, but it is an interesting question because it comes down to what we're doing for clinicians with research.
Well,
that's
it might be that you ask more questions, and that's something that, but, you know, sort of Western medicine where it was valuable, like Dartmouth Co-op had a group, and they'd say, okay, this wasn't systematically being asked, so they wouldn't know.
Right.
And they'd learn something. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you're saying mm-hmm. you may not learn something new that you don't already find out.
I won't be so confident that that wouldn't happen also with an integrative practitioner. The conversations are much longer,
yeah.
and I can guarantee that with transcripts. You know, the conversations that happen between integrative practitioners and patients are much, much more extensive. So, but it would be really interesting to look at what, you know, that might add. Okay. I'll take all the credit.